Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. My name is Jill Brenneman. This is XBN, Sloppy's Broadcast Network. My thanks to Liz Berlin of Rest of Root for allowing us to use her music for our program. We have a wonderful guest tonight. Joining us tonight is Gracie Bassett. Gracie is a sex worker, though no longer working directly with clients in the flesh, she now uses the media to work with issues of sexuality. Gracie, welcome to XBN.
Well, I'm really glad to be here.
Once again, this being our internet-based technology, we welcome all of our listeners. You can contact us at 646-200-3136, and assuming our switchboard doesn't crash, our live switchboard, we should have a great show. Gracie, tell us a little bit about yourself. About yourself, to use current English.
Well, I used to be an escort, and after a few years of that, I started to recognize some patterns, not only in the workers, but in the clients, and I found most of those issues mirrored in relationships, both, you know, sexual and friendship-wise, with issues of intimacy and fear of closeness, whether it be physical or emotional, and started to really work with that more with writing and then took that to the internet. And so that's kind of what I've been working on most of the time. I find that the phrase sex worker is made up of two words, and while a lot of sex workers are busy advocating for rights of workers, I find the biggest problem thwarting us all is that sex is really misunderstood and misidentified.
How would you change the identification of sex?
I just think that I have a phrase that I always use, everybody poos and everybody screws. It's just a basic biological thing, and the two are related because, you know, we use the bathroom privately. We don't walk into the middle of Walmart and poop. We don't walk into the middle of Walmart and have sex, but we all recognize that certain bodily functions are necessary except sex. And that sort of shame-filled taboo-ness of it makes it really difficult for us to, as a society, deal with it, whether it's one-on-one in our relationships or with the media or anything. That sort of closeted reality of sex. Ambiguous for most people to handle. So I guess I'd like to bring sex out of the closet first.
You know, I'm really impressed. I have never put that concept together before. Very few concepts leave me speechless. That one really impressed me. You can must write a book on that. On that very topic.
I'm losing you a bit here in the fuzz.
Yeah, we seem to be struggling a little bit on both ends of connection. When you focus on legitimizing sex itself, how would you go about doing that?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do as a nation and then as a world is have honest-to-goodness real sex education programs. You know, we potty train our children, and we teach them from early on that there are basic real words for terms like, you know, defecating and urinating, and then we all deal in little other terms for it. But we teach our children that there's a place for it, this is the proper way to do it, and then we relax and count on them to do it. If we have a problem, we haven't had a BM in 5 days, we go to our doctor and he gives something for that. And we need to deal with sex in that very same manner where we teach our children in school and at home the basic concepts of what sex is, how to keep ourselves safe from pregnancy, from disease, and emotionally, because that's a huge part of sex. And then we should trust our children and young adults to make decisions, and we should be able to be allowed to call our physicians when we haven't had sex in 5 days and complain about it, and be given help, whether it's masturbatory or professional services or anything else. It's a simple biological human need. And if we can deal with it like that, then sex work becomes like any other work. We don't belittle people that charge for housing. We don't belittle people that charge for food. But we belittle people who charge for another biological function, and I think that's absurd.
Now, as you know, Diane Sawyer did a recent special on ABC News, and we've both been quite outspoken about that, and Diane sort of liked to present any type of professional that engages in sex work.
You know, that whole episode just made me foam at the mouth. I didn't expect it to be perfect or even all that fair, but I expected some journalistic integrity. I expected her, when she interviewed people, to let them answer instead of answering for them. I didn't expect to see repulsion on her face. I didn't expect to see her and her producers focus only on those trapped in poverty. And those issues that you focus on are horrific, and they are in sex work, but they're also in fast food joints. There are lawyers who are addicted to drugs and suffer from child abuse and make horrible decisions. And by putting issues as if they're one and the same, that poverty and hopelessness and drug addiction and poor choices are sex work, that doesn't even qualify as journalism.
Yeah, that was my feeling too. I was kind of astonished, even for Diane Sawyer, who I really have very little regard for.
Well, whatever I had for her is gone now.
Yeah, me too. You know, I always had the sense that she was after Peter Jennings' anchor chair. But when I saw her essentially ask and then answer the question for a sex worker that didn't fit her all victim all the time format, And to watch the revulsion on her face, it literally kind of threw journalistic integrity. You know, I expect. No, please, go ahead.
It was horrible for those women and those workers because they were so trapped by their situation. They were so hopeless. And, you know, they're living in places without heat. They're standing outside. You know, I would have gone into that van to get out of the cold. You know what I mean? Have a cup of coffee, get warm for 5 minutes. I would have done that. And that sense of feeling miserable and pitiful, I would have said a million things on a bad day. I mean, no matter where I was. And for her to take statements like the one woman who talked about how she stomped on a kitten for cash and act as if that's sex work, you know, things like that were just so misleading and so horrible. That's a person clearly with issues, whether it's mental illness or poverty and despair. I don't know her well enough to say, but someone who stomps on a kitten for cash, that's not sex work. That's desperation and human depravity at work. That's nothing else. Whether that person was a sex worker, a lawyer, or a policeman, it doesn't matter. Or a journalist willing to use that to make a great headline or news bit. Bad.
Now, there was a recent effort by Melissa Farley, the researcher, PhD, self-appointed guru of all things prostitution, all things related to the sex industry out in San Francisco. And Melissa was very adamant that that was a very accurate portrayal. And she applauded Diane Sawyer and essentially tried to rally call her supporters to flood the the ABC News blog on this topic to counter our opinions, you know, counter sex worker rights opinions. What is your sense? Where do you feel that Melissa Farley is coming from with that?
I don't know much about her, to be honest, or her organizations and attitudes, but I'm not going to lie or fudge numbers like Diane Sawyer also did and say that 90% of people X are. But, you know, there are sex workers trapped in poverty and hellish conditions. There are people dealing with horrible drug addiction. Those are distinct problems unto themselves. Again, they could be a fast food worker with an addiction. They could be, they can be a senator with a drug addiction. Those situations cause poor decision making, and I feel horrible for the people that feel trapped in those situations. And those, it's like human trafficking being a discussion of sex work. Human trafficking, whether it's for sex or any other manual labor or anything, is a condition of slavery and is separate. There shouldn't be sex slaves. There shouldn't be, forced domestic servants. There shouldn't be anybody. These are issues in our society, but they are not the definition of our industry. And our industry, in fact, covers so much more than prostitution or escorting that it's really ridiculous to take umbrella industry and only focus on one aspect of it. I feel horrible for the women that are and men that are trapped in those situations, and I do hope that there's help for them, whether it's counseling, drug addiction, and help with their poverty. But there really isn't anything to say that's a life of sex. And that was so far removed from anything I did, anyone I worked with, and anyone that I talk with now. Now, to some extent, that's going to be true because a large part of my work and communication is the internet, and the very poor don't have the internet connection, whether they're sex workers or not. There's going to be a certain amount of income or educational difference for some of the sex workers I meet. And again, I have no numbers to say what percentage of sex workers I talk to. But I guess they're angry at this notion that is the vision of sex work. Trapped people are trapped people. Enslaved people are enslaved people. Those are people with those situations, whether they're working in sex work or not, that's the issue. And those people should be helped and saved from those situations. So in that sense, I would say, yes, let's help those people. But to say that is the definition of sex work, or that is any percentage of our industry, that's inaccurate.
Well, you know, and I think part of the basis, part of a lot of this so-called research you see, where it says, 93% of all sex workers stated in a survey that they would like to leave now. I mean, I think if you ask the average McDonald's worker on a bad day.
Ask the average congressman on a bad day. Ask the average physician on a bad day. Everybody dreams of retirement and independent wealth. I mean, that's America.
I mean why do we all play the lottery,
Yeah. So I, to some extent, and what you're saying is exactly true, that this unhappiness or dissatisfaction, based on what? And other qualifiers, and any survey, that number would be lifted from, I'd really have to look at the survey questions. And again, the population of people they're doing. There are so many in sex work that either don't identify as sex workers for one reason or another because they're, let's say, erotica authors and don't see themselves as sex workers. And there's others that are doing sex work like prostitution, which I'm using the word which I know isn't very politically correct right now, but is easily understood, working directly with clients for flesh, for sexual satisfaction. You don't come out and say so. I mean, you where are they? I mean, where are they handing out these surveys? At Walmart? I on a good day with my family, I'm not going to stand there and fill out that survey at Walmart. There's a lot of privacy issues. So I guess I don't know where that stuff comes from. and where they would say they have any percentage of the sex worker population to begin with, let alone to say that they have, they can say 93% of their respondents were dissatisfied. I would have to see the survey to see why they would answer that, and I would like to know how they say that that is any representative population of our industry.
Well, you know, and I think one of the things that's missed in surveys like that is that, you know, they're taken at face value, and you're right, no one really examines the questions. I mean, one could go to an airport today and ask a Skybus traveler. Skybus is one of the four airlines that went out of business this week. You know, a stranded Skybus traveler, and say, you know, are you satisfied with the level of service you received at Skybus? And probably 90-something percent of them today would say no, you know, given that they're stranded by the airline's bankruptcy. But if you'd asked that a week ago, it would have been a whole different ball game. And
well, and dissatisfied too means would imply that perhaps they're not satisfied with their work, not because of the actual client daily part of their work, but they don't like the media portrayal. They don't like the criminal risk. They don't like, you know, the fact that they can't get insurance. There's lots of things to be dissatisfied about in sex work that have nothing to do with the sex aspect at all, but just that the industry isn't respected, and therefore you aren't respected. You know, that leaves a lot of people dissatisfied.
Well, you know, I know as a former sex worker myself that my greatest fear was not of all the things listed. My greatest fear was of the police. You know, of being arrested and that in itself is an issue that I think society doesn't want to address. You know, that the criminalization of consensual adult sex work,
that's like a huge issue. My largest fear was not so much the police as, I mean, no one wants to be arrested. I don't want to spend time in jail. But I don't, you know, the repercussions for family and friends, you know, the circus that unfolds when your daughter is a sex worker, to put family and friends through that, that was my biggest fear. And I think that, again, leads back to the idea of if sex were considered okay and then sex work was considered legitimate, then we wouldn't have societal reaction to it either. You know, they talk a lot about the double lives of sex workers, and that isn't one that we necessarily choose. It's one we agree to enter in, you know, but it isn't necessarily a choice. I can say I'm happy doing my work, but that doesn't mean I want to speak to my father-in-law or, you know, my sister. You know, that's a different thing.
I have to pause for just a moment as we have to do this legal thing to identify our broadcaster. This is XBN, the Swap East Broadcast Network, powered by Blog Talk Radio. My name is Jill Brenneman. My guest is Gracie Pestet. If you would like to join us, you are more than welcome to call. You can do that by calling 646-200-3136. You can also email a question in. If you are shy or just don't want to use the phone, you can do that by emailing xbmlive@gmail.com. Gracie, how do you feel the attitude about sex affects individual relationships, say marriages, friendships?
Well, I'm sure since you are a sex worker too, you recall many of the clients that came in, and you know the old joke about my wife doesn't understand me. Most conversations can start out to that extent, or really, it's really about the person not understanding and accepting themselves. If you can't accept this about yourself, it's pretty hard to share it with anyone else. Whether it's you want to be spanked or you're a cross-dresser, there comes a point in any relationship where you need to divulge or keep a secret. And then, when do you let the secret out? Is it, you know, how soon is too soon to tell certain things, and how long have you kept silent that now it would be some sort of betrayal of a secret? And if we all just understood ourselves and accepted things about ourselves, were safe, sane, and consensual, then we wouldn't have these barriers between ourselves, that where we couldn't talk to a spouse or a doctor, and it would be okay. Again, you know, like, everybody poos, everybody screws. We don't walk up to every cashier at the checkout counter and talk about our latest bowel movements, and we don't need to tell them about our sex kink. But when it comes to the people we live with and the people we love with, we should be able to have those conversations, and we don't. The other day I was just talking to a gentleman, I was female talking with him, he was saying that his marriage was falling apart. He was asking her for a divorce, and he felt, of course, sadness and loss, but also relief, because now he was going to be able to do his cross-dressing. And I said, you know, that people don't put enough thought into their sex life going into a marriage. They think they can live without something. Whether it's big or little, they think they can live without it. But if you were a bowler and you went bowling every week and you won trophies and that was your life, as you were in the bowling group, and your spouse or spouse sees that you absolutely never again may you bowl, you wouldn't marry them. You'd say, no, it's a great hobby. I love it. There's nothing wrong with it. It's part of who I am, and I'm keeping it. So this isn't going to work out. And not enough people say that about sex things, and they end up with these secret guilty pleasures that they don't know how to discuss, so they have to go to a professional. So you call your doctor and say, I haven't been able to orgasm, and they're like, so what? Tell them you haven't been able to have a bowel movement, and they'll give you, you know, 45 prescriptions for things. You know? So it's just it's a whole mindset of that sex is important. It's a huge part of the human being, and we are animals, and that is a huge part of what motivates us to do anything. If we don't accept that, then we're never going to be able to be open and honest with ourselves, accepting of ourselves and of our partners.
Now, how do you feel, given that, and this is, I realize this is somewhat of a generalization, but that mainly the workforce of sex workers is female. How do you think the views of sex affect feminism, affect equality?
Oh, it's huge. Every time a society becomes fearful, whether it's an internal country crisis or fear of threat from an outsider, the first thing governments do is try to control women. Everything from rights to abortion in this country to vote, owning land, all sorts of things. It's documented throughout history. And it's one of the first things we do is control our women. For some reason, women are fearful objects. I still think it goes back to the old we can bleed for 7 days and not die thing. There's just something so, I think it's enviable because it's out of their control. They can't control our bodies, so therefore our beings must be controlled legally. And because of this, you know, generalizations about men wanting sex, but more men are willing to admit the need, even if they can't be honest about it with their partner, or if they can't be honest about it in all aspects of their life. They seek a professional to solve their problem, their issue, to take care of it. And that ends up being women who are employed in this industry. And, you know, with the huge number of women that are employed, if they governments feel they can control us and make us the bad girls that are seducing the men, if they can stop us, then men will be good little boys. And everything will be fine. And the country will be great. And morality, you know, hurrah, and family values and all the little words they throw at us. When really it's about controlling women. We are the danger to be feared because we cannot be fully controlled or replicated. We can't fully replace yet. So therefore the bottom line becomes control us, control our bodies.
You know, and I think you see that as a worldwide phenomenon, you know, and which seems to cross so many cultural boundaries, you know, whether it's, you know, the binding of the feet, the covering the, you know, women being required to cover at various levels, you know, in Islamic countries, you know, to
there's an excellent book on that called Eve's Seed, Biology to Sexism in the Course of History by Robert Mack. I can't pronounce his name. MCELGAINE. I'll put it up on my website later. I'm in the middle of reading it. And it's about that very same thing. It's about how women have been controlled through the time in history and based out of fear. And in reality, there's such few differences between male and female. It's like, I don't know, I forget the number. I think it's like 13, maybe 26% at most. It's biologically different from male to female. We have much more in common as human beings than we do different. And but it's that small set of differences that men are not able to do. They are not able to carry and give birth, and they want control of that.
You know, and I think there's so much fear. There's so much fear amongst men of things related to women. You know, I picture. I go back to my own history, asking a boyfriend, "Can you please, you know, while you're going to the convenience store, can you please pick me up, you know, maxi pads?" And having him go into cardiac arrest.
You know,
and what makes me laugh is I remember him coming back and he did it, but he told me about how he made sure to tell the cashier they weren't for him.
Yeah, as if the cashier wouldn't know that. But I've seen it happen with men with condoms. Men don't want to buy condoms because it would. Somehow emasculate using the condoms. It's very strange. A lot of this comes back to ownership in the sense that in Victorian times, prior to Victorian and the Industrial Revolution, there were farming communities. And if Ma and Pa Farmer each went off and had their own affair, when Ma Farmer came back with her pregnant belly, it was just great because it was extra hands to work on the farm. No one cared about paternity. And if he had, you know, a kid that wasn't his, it didn't matter because two of his were for the other farm. No one worried about it much because they were going to be farmhands they were taking care of, and that was the end of it. When the Industrial Revolution came along, when children started being dropped off at the orphanages, there wasn't a way to employ children. And then the governments, the cities started worrying about these children that weren't there that they were going to have to pay for and that they weren't bringing in income. And they belonged, you know, the general public had to pay for them. And it was around that time that you start seeing a lot more laws coming into play governing women's sexuality and paternity, simply because it was the control. And as children have become devalued, women as the bringers of children, because you know we do this by ourselves, we have to be controlled about whether or not we bring in these really devalued beings. So the sexuality has really become the tension between the genders for all of our talk about it in the past years, since the Industrial Revolution, we've really kind of gone backwards in a way of respecting children and therefore women because of the horrifying bringers, you know, of life. And at the same time, we can't be trusted to make decisions to not carry that pregnancy through because that would be, you know, an abomination too. But you see it played out in many countries, you know, where fundamentalism comes into play at weaker times. And the other interesting thing I've noted through history is that every time that women start to gain power, the hemlines go up. Because as we become more powerful and gain more ground, we have to really make sure that we show off our sexual selves. So it's kind of interesting, these back and forth relationships we have with control and how they're played out. But in a, you know, when sex work is an industry that's made up mainly of women workers, clearly the big threat, you know, is that, again, of the female seductress taking away the innocent man and ruining the family. It's not fair and it's not accurate. Anybody that works in the industry knows that. Most of the clients will recognize that. But it's sadly the way that the general society and the governing bodies view it as a threat.
You know, and it's one of the things that I gave thought to as a sex worker, and certainly I've been asked when I've been interviewed, you know, how did I feel about that? And, you know, not once did I ever go into, you know, any type of situation involving a client and say, you know, laugh like the Scooby-Doo villain and say, you know, I'm going to ruin this guy's marriage today. You know, yet that's the, you know, one of the criticisms that I saw in the Spitzer case that came down on Kristen, the escort, was, you know, well, did she consider what it would do to Spitzer's family? And my immediate thought to that was, well, why isn't this question being asked of Spitzer? You know,
she didn't make, yeah, Kristen make, or any sex worker didn't make that vow in that marriage or that relationship if you're not married. If you're betraying the commitment you made to another person, whether it's in an affair or a paid relationship, the other person doesn't really have the responsibility. If it's not going to be Kristen, then it, you know, could have been me or you, you know. It's not really not about the other person.
Well, and
no one lured Spitzer away from his marriage. He obviously felt there was something he needed to get elsewhere. For whatever reason.
It's such a ridiculous assumption, I think, that it's thrown just on sex workers. I mean, if you're the car rental agent that rents the car to you know, client Joe to go pick up a sex worker, you know, are you guilty of would anybody ever think you're guilty of breaking up his marriage? You know, of course not.
No.
You know, it all revolves around sex, and really, to me, it revolves around, you know, placing the blame on women. You know, I mean, if there's a commitment there. You know, Kristen, as you said, was not married to Silva Spitzer. She did not make the commitment to him. So, you know, Elliot did. And again, you know, as you had stated, I think this goes a lot back to everything being kind of tossed on women. You know, and certainly religion plays into this.
Yeah. The other thing that I'd like to point out, too, and I don't want to be accused of romanticizing sex work, as Diane Sawyer would say, but there's, I would say 50% of my former business, and even those that I talk with today through emails that ask questions and things, is that really 50% of the thing isn't about sex. Even if I can't tell you the number of clients that would hurry up at the end of the day just to get to the, well, they felt they had to perform, but they'd be letting me down, or they'd be less masculine if they didn't, you know, consummate. And there's so much more to sex work than semen, you know. There just really is. I had a number of regular clients that, through the course of time, helped with them to discuss with their spouse how to come out to their spouse about, you know, their fetish. How to have that conversation, because they felt, you know, if they hadn't confessed it in 5 months or 5 years, you know, how could they now? And I think a lot of sex work falls under that umbrella of, you know, it's not about taking the man away or placing him back, but it's about focusing on that person's needs for that period of time. I can't tell you the number of ex-boyfriends that would have loved to have paid for me, simply because then I would have shut up my yapping about me and focused on them for an hour or three, right? And, you know, I don't know what Spitzer was into or what he did it into, but being in a position of power, however you define that, can be quite isolating, you know? And if he needed a place to go and unload from that because he didn't feel he could get that at home, and my phrase here, he didn't feel he could get this at home, is A, conjecture on my part, and B, about his feelings, it has nothing to do with whether or not his wife would or wouldn't have met them. But that's how he felt. And that's not going to be avoided simply because, you know, Kristen said no. The agency would have just given him another girl, or he would have called another agency. So whatever it was that Spitzer or any client feels they need, that's what's in them as a person. You can't blame the sex worker for him having a need.
Now, Gracie, you know, we have a caller. Would you like to take a caller?
Sure.
Hello, Gracie.
Hello.
Hi, Gracie. This is Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Quick points. How are you?
I am fine.
A couple of quick points. Your point about men fearing women is really interesting because, as you know, one of the worst insults a guy can tell another is, you did that like a woman. You know, and we play golf together, a bunch of guys. If you hit the ball or miss a shot, they accuse you of being Alice, or they say, does your husband play golf? And, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So one of the worst insults is that. The other point is, when you're checking your theory of hemlines, that's really interesting. Check also the colletage, because our agency, DDD Worldwide, did a study of women and the colletage. And a large part of it, you know, women are showing more of their bosoms at work, seems to be, I am dressing for me. I'm not dressing necessarily for someone else. And I wonder if that's not part of what you're saying, is that women feel free or freer to dress the way they wish and to say, you know, to heck with the rest of the world, I'm going to wear my bust line low because I choose to. Interesting theory.
Yeah, I'm glad you called because I know you, right? From the message.
Yes, you
course.
Do.
Okay, good. I'm waving hi, not that you can see me. Yeah, Greg brings up a couple of good points. I think there's two things going on right now with shorter skirts and bussy babes popping out of shirts at the workplace. I think the societal pressure to conform to a masculine role when assuming power, and we see how that's affecting some backlash on Hillary Clinton right now. Trying to play a man's game, if you approach it like a man, then you're not a woman. So then you're a robot.
Yeah.
So there's some women who are going to say, I'm going to play a man's game by my rules. And she's still going to hit that glass ceiling really hard. The other thing is there's this third wave feminist movement with a lot of them 20-somethings believe they can have it all. And with all due respect to my younger sisters, I'm going to have to say you can't because men don't even have it all. So there are things we're going to have to trade off. No man has the perfect marriage and the ideal career going at the same time. If he does, it's because someone else is taking care of those kids at home. He may look like he has it going on, but he's missing something. And the flip side of that is women, unfortunately, have a biological clock. We go gangbusters after our careers during our 20s and 30s. We wake up and realize we may have missed that opportunity. And those
That's
are just
right.
biological facts that have to be addressed. And so the third waivers who believe they can have it all and act like a man are kind of missing some of the points here. Men don't even have it all. So I will...
So what you're saying is that we need to find some compromise. It's the old thing. We need to find some compromise between us.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should be equal, and there sure isn't equality yet, with all respect. You know, I know I said men don't have it all. They don't. They have it better than women. But fundamentally, they don't have it all. We need to accept the fact that we are equal but different. And there's a smaller percentage difference between us than we have in common.
Yeah, that's
well
said.
We really need to accept that. That this is just biologically what it means to be a woman. This is what it biologically means to be a man. And this is what our society is going to tolerate. And I think we have to agree that we're going to tolerate sexuality or we're not going to have a continued society.
Yes, we need that. That's well said.
All right, well, caller, thank you for joining us on XBN, the Swappies Broadcast Network. If you would like to join in this conversation, my guest is Gracie Passett. You can join us at 646-200-3136. XBN is powered by Blog Talk Radio. And Gracie, did you have any other thoughts to what the caller?
Well, I know Greg kind of off and on for, I'd say, at least a year now from from my website, sexpit.net. He's a regular on the forums there. And thanks, guys. I'm just waving hi again. But he brings up some really good points. I mean, quite often as a sex worker and as a woman, it's very easy to feel, you know, our inequality, And when we do that, we kind of become forgetful that men don't have everything either, and that the very fact that there is inequality puts things in an uncomfortable place for men, because they can't change from traditional roles either, and they're put in a situation of not being able to talk to us either. And again, that goes back to that intimacy, which is something, you know, related to sex, but not necessarily sexual. But if we can be, you know, if we can't have a conversation across the gender lines, then, you know, kind of hope is lost here. They're just as imprisoned as we are. They have better teeth.
All right, Gracie, we have another caller. Calling you on the air on XBN.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Just a question for both of you, which is if the Diane Sawyer stereotype of the much abused and taken advantage of sex worker is not always true, is the romanticized stereotype at the other extreme ever true of the totally satisfied woman saying, yes, this is a career I chose, I'm happy with it, I go home with a smile on my face? Does it work at the as an actually fulfilling career for somebody?
For me personally, it does. I mean, I don't work with clients directly anymore, but I still consider myself a sex worker, and I love it. And I would speak for several of my other friends. I would say Radical Vixen loves it. The Libertine loves it. I know she'll be on tomorrow. And Secondhand Rose is a PSO. Angela St. Lawrence, another great PSO. They love their work.
I sometimes worry that that's just men projecting satisfaction on their partner's side, to, so that they won't feel guilty about it.
I mean, I can't speak for everybody. I'm sure there's cases where that happens. But fundamentally, mm-hmm. if you have a woman who makes a choice to make this a career, there's no reason she can't be as happy at being a sex worker as she can an attorney or a doctor or, you know, a sergeant in the Army. Aside from the crushing self-esteem blows you get by, you know, hearing about yourself in the media portrayed completely wrong and being viewed as, your work being a crime, but just the work itself, if you take the social and political constraints out of it, I guess the bottom line comes down to the ability to choose your career. If you choose this as a career, you can have every right to expect it to be as wonderful as any other job. There will be days you grumble that you have to go to work because human beings would like to sit home some days. But yes, absolutely. I don't know. Jill, how about you?
Well, you know, I think it crosses the spectrum, and I think articles like Diane Sawyer's, you know, they conflate two very different dynamics that, you know, that Diane Sawyer took women off the street and what I understood to be, you know, cold weather in a cold weather city, and, you know, women in a very difficult situation, and said, you know, how do you feel about this? You know, I mean, you could go ask the sex worker in Minneapolis at midnight in December when the wind is blowing, you know, 40 miles per hour out of the northwest, you know, how do you feel about your career? And you know, she's freezing, and you know, she needs the money, and this may not be her career choice. And I think that's an entirely different dynamic than the sex worker who chooses to do it. And you know, I think it's degrees. I mean, if you ask anybody at any given job, you know.
Exactly. Ask that same worker in Minneapolis in the wind blowing if she likes being a taxi cab driver. No?
You know,
ask her if she likes being a waitress. Ask her if she likes being a CEO on the day that, you know, someone else is trying to do a raid move. I mean, everybody has bad days. I think the potential, again, if you choose and you're educated about what you're getting into, like any career choice, if it's something you like to do, you can love it.
I can speak as a former flight attendant that was based in Minneapolis, and we had to park on the 8th level of the parking deck, which was the top level, and there were more than one day when I had to, you know, go clean my car off with, you know, a foot and a half of snow on it after having been away for 3 days in that terrible polyester wool blend dress, and said to myself, you know, why don't I just get an office job?
Right.
You know,
but I don't think sex work fundamentally in and of itself means that you have to have poor self-esteem to do it or to be doing it. I don't think that it has to be, but I think that has to come down to the individual, how well they're suited for the job. There are skills and strengths with this job, just like any other industry has. You know,
are there positives to the job? From
Yeah, it for me, I really like helping people. And I know another PSO I know, her name is Secondhand Rose, she used to be an escort. She stopped doing it while she was married, and she's back in doing phone work now because she really misses the one-on-one. She wrote stories for a while. And I know a lot of people that do that got out of the work and then have gotten back into it one phase or another because they like it. Taught me a lot about relationships. I made really bad relationship choices when I was younger and after sex work. You know, I was really clear about what I needed. I knew what pitfalls and relationships could be, and I knew what I needed to express about myself and what to look for in a partner and what were really going to be deal breakers. And, yeah, some of that was based on sex. But, you know, now I'm completely happy with that. I learned from that job, and I'm still learning from that job. Every once in a while someone will ask me a question or bring up a fetish or a scenario or a relationship that's different than my experience, and it's great to learn. So there's a lot of rewards from it. It's great to know that you've helped somebody come through or be able to accept their sexuality in a healthy way. That's a great feeling. Maybe one person, but it's one less person walking around hating themselves, going home and yelling at the wife and kicking the dog, you know? And I work with a lot of women now, too. The same thing. I think women need to be more empowered to make those choices for themselves so they don't end up staying in relationships where they haven't had an orgasm in 25 years, you know?
That's great, too. We've got an email from xbnlive@gmail.com, and the emailer from Butte, Montana is asking, what is a cross-dresser?
A cross-dresser? Oh, wow. A cross-dresser is a person who likes to dress up in the other gender's clothing. It's very common to see women today wearing pants and what will be considered male attire, but there's a large portion of men who like to dress in women's clothing for either basic comfort things, they just like the feeling of the materials more, or for, you know, fetish and sexualized wear, and no, they do not have to be gay to be interested in.
You know, and thinking about it, it's where that's considered such a taboo. You know, I don't know that I'd ever given much thought to the concept until right now, but where it's considered such a taboo for men, you know, it's kind of a slap at women. You know, that taboo, like, well, if God forbid a man wears something.
Right, because there's
woman,
nothing lower, right? There's nothing lower than being a woman, unless you're an Indian woman in this country, Native American woman, nothing lower. It's kind of an interesting thing. Cross-dressing is it's got a continuum of about as varied as BDSM does. The whole spectrum and the whole gambit might be as simple as preferring to wear ladies' panties to men's every day under their suit. Might be like to be dressed up from head to toe, makeup, shoes, wig, eyelashes, and a female name. And that does not necessarily mean that they want to be a different gender. It just means they like do this for whatever reason. It can be very complicated histories or reasons why they get this pattern in their mind that they do. And it's one of the harder things I've discovered for men to be able to talk to their partners about. They feel it'll be the least accepted. of the, you know.
All right, Gracie, this is XBN, the Swap Base Broadcast Network. We have another caller. Would you like to take another caller?
Sure. Hello?
See if the technology will bring this caller. Caller, you are on the air on XBN, the Swap
Base Broadcast
Network.
Yes, this is, hello?
Hello?
Caller,
hello,
go ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, caller. Go ahead.
Hello? Can Gracie hear me? Because I hear her saying hello, hello, hello.
I know who this is. Hello, Angela.
Hi, how are you?
This is the fabulous Angela St. Lawrence.
Hi, everybody.
So what's your question?
My
or
question.
Do you have a comment?
Well, I kind of have a comment slash question. I was thinking about when I was listening to you talk that you have to say sex work is at least our end. My end, when you were an escort, there's a lot more intimacy in there than a lot of your other jobs.
Yeah, there is.
Don't you think? And
you're
I think
really
there's a lot
of
responsibility.
Yourself.
There's a lot of responsibility that goes along with that. And if we want respect, we have to act in a respectful way. And I don't think all sex workers do that. I think a lot of them do. But we need a lot more to do that. And I was thinking about 2257 and when that came in for the websites and how everybody kind of scrambled and nobody stuck together. And I just wish we'd see more of that in this industry.
More solidarity?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think what Bill's doing with her organization is hoping to do that. And Bow Not Gagged. And there's lots of other ones trying to do that. But I think your point about the respect and the intimacy required in this kind of work, like I was telling the second caller, that there is a skill set needed in this work that people don't often think about, and that is that you're giving of yourself, not talking about, you know, your genitalia or your hand, but you're giving your brain, and it allows you to bit of your soul over. I know Diane Sawyer thought that meant I was somehow degrading myself, but I think, you know, as a caregiving, nurturing kind of person, you know, you give bits of yourself to your children and your spouse and your parents and your extended family and your circle of friends. But to do that to a stranger and to help them and to commit to them, and for a fee, it doesn't degrade it any more than, you know, a doctor with a Hippocratic oath. And I think that if you treat your clients with respect, they'll treat you with respect. And you know, that's where like you were saying, that if we have to come across more respectful with the media, I think we do have to draw lines in the sand and say you can't call us that, you can't cross that line, that's inappropriate. But I do think, you know, we can't hurl names back at them either.
Did you hear the rumor? I haven't checked this out, but a little birdie told me that interview, people are saying that interview that show Diane Sawyer had was actually something that had been in the can for a couple years, and they just brought it out because of the New York governor scandal. Did you hear that?
I believe 2020 themselves acknowledged that. I think they weren't done with it, was the story.
Okay,
they
brought it out.
There.
Okay.
Yeah, they were doing it to make money off the Spitzer scandal, definitely.
So who's the whore? Let me ask you that. Who's the whore? Just thought I'd throw that out.
Right after she says, use respect. What do you think, Jill? Who is for?
Personally, I wish I could cue up the song Dirty Laundry and throw it into.
Yeah, exactly. I thought the same thing, Don Henley. Yeah, but I, you know, it was, and that's the thing is, I feel really proud of the ethic that myself and so many like you, Angela, that have in your work this strong work ethic and a sense of responsibility and commitment that goes with that. And I feel ashamed and embarrassed for Diane Sawyer because she showed none of her journalistic integrity in that piece at all. I don't know how.
Yeah, I actually thought she was a lot smarter than that. I really did.
I didn't expect it to be hurrah. I didn't expect it to be hurrah, hooray for sex workers, but I didn't expect it to be so biased and a poor bit of journalism, so slanted without, you know, and for her to keep some sort of distance from the piece, to be reporting and not be repulsed and cringing.
Well, I think this was a very interesting interview, and I'm so glad that you're on the air like this, because I see at the website that I can actually put this at my blog, and I'll be sure to do that.
You can, and anyone listening can. You can grab one of those promo cubes from xxbn.net and attach it to your blog, and in the act of shameless self-promotion for XBN, I certainly would encourage anybody to.
Well,
now who's being a whore?
Yeah, the difference is we admit it.
and the difference is we can call each other that. If someone else calls me that, I'm going to want to know why they think they have the right to. You know, it's like the N word or the B word. I can use it with my sisters, and that's fine. But, if you're not in this old girls club, you can't throw around the W word until you've earned the right to.
I hope
a lot of people get a chance to hear this. It's been very interesting. I'll definitely blog it. Definitely.
The show
and anybody
is also
out there listening, blog it. Pardon?
We've got 524 listeners, according to our Blog Talk Radio stat counter thing here. And the shows are archived, so you can archive them, you can download them, you can do all kinds of fun things with them.
Okay. Well, we'll be doing that.
Okay, well, I'm going to hang up now. Thank you so much.
Bye, Angela. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling XBN, the Swampies Broadcast Network. We also want to mention the website that you brought up, Gracie, boundnotgagged.com.
Yeah, boundnotgagged.com. That's not my website. That's part of the Desiree Alliance, I believe. I think that's their official blog.
Yes.
Excellent site.
Now, what is your website again, Gracie? I found your website after we discussed you being on the show and found it to be a really great website. I'd like to share that with the audience.
It's sex-kitten.net.
It's a great site. I was fascinated by looking at it, and I think it's great that all these forms of new media have sprung up in the last, really in the last couple of years, where all of a sudden...
Well, Sex Kitten's been around, I think we were saying that it's been around 6 or 7 years at least. And we've always had sex workers and non-sex workers at the site. It's mainly women who write. Occasionally we have men come and visit us in the parlor and write their pieces. We've had transgender people, lesbians, gay, straight, all races, and it's kind of been my dream to kind of have us all get together and talk about sex, because we've all got something to say about that.
Now, your website, if Jerry Falwell were still alive, Jerry probably wouldn't like your website.
No, but that's okay. I didn't like his either.
That's wow, what a coincidence. The end of the day. We're down to about 30 seconds, Gracie. Is there anything you'd like to?
Well, I'm just really glad to be here. I'm really glad to see the radio shows doing this. And I know I'm going to give a shout out to, we all call her Libby. She writes at Sex Kitten, and she's going to be, I believe, on your show tomorrow. Serpent Libertine is what she goes by now on her blog. And she's a sex worker out of Chicago, so I would tell everyone who's listening now to tune in tomorrow for her show.
I bet you she's a great interview, just like you have been, too.
Well, thanks.
Monday we have Renegade Evolution, which I realize the website states different. We had a guest cancellation, and Renegade Evolution, and certainly she also has an innumerable amount of views. So please do join us in all of these. Gracie, I'd like to thank you for being on the XBN.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Please feel free to come back as a guest. Get in touch with me. I'd love to have you back again.
Well, thanks. I'll do that.
My guest has been Gracie Passet. This is XBN. XXBN. You can find us at xxbn.net. We are powered by the Sex Workers Outreach Project East Media Group. You can find them at swop.org. I would like to thank our musical sponsors tonight, those of us who are letting us use their music, the Cowboy Junkies, and Liz Berlin, XXBN, Ron Durham. Gracie, thank you so much.
Oh, it was great. I had a lot of fun. I was totally sweating it.
I'm sorry?
I was sweating. I was a little nervous because I didn't know what you were, you know, what it was going to really be like. So,
you know,
I was terrified no one would call or.
No, this was great. This is our most callers. You certainly brought the callers in, and I had a great time. You did a great job. I'm really, really glad you came on. I'd love to have you again.
Okay, well, look at my schedule. Let me know when you need somebody.
Anything is open after next Friday. We used to have two shows a day, and Blog Talk Radio has shut that off. They're only giving us one show a day now. But we've got some space again later in the week. So, you know, the part I struggled with was Blog Talk Radio. A lot of times this happens. We don't have a good connection.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was breaking up. I could hear enough, but callers were clearer than you.
Yeah, I don't know why that happens sometimes. You know, and there's no real way to correct it online. It's kind of a poor, it's kind of a poor switchboard setup. If I disconnect myself, it leaves the show without a host. You know, I guess it's a new, it's a new project, Blog Talk Radio, and they're still working out the kinks. But again, thank you so much.
I'm glad. I hope it works well for you guys. And I know Angela put it up. We'll put it up on our blog, too, so on our site, too. So. And I'll be listening tomorrow for Libby.
All right. I'm anxious to meet her. I've never met her before, so it'll be...
Oh, she's a hoot. You'll like her. And I know she's just started up that new media, Red Light District Chicago, so she'll probably want to talk about that a lot.
You know, it's amazing we're taking control of our own media, and, you know, with events like this, eventually we won't even need Diane Sawyer anymore. She can be a guest on our media.
Well, I don't even know if we'd want to start that low on the tier.
Geez, I know.
It's a big issue, it really is, but, you know, I know that a lot of people want to start with workers' rights. You know, I'm kind of on the other end saying that, you know, we're not going to get accepted until sex is accepted.
I think it's great that you started from a different perspective. You know, it's one of the things I've been looking for, actually. You know, with someone to start from a different place. I'm really glad that you did.
Well, I'll come on again, and we'll talk about it some more.
All right. Well, they're going to kick us off in about 20
okay.
seconds.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Joe.
All right, Gracie. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.